Hey there, Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. fans. Welcome to another episode of the Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. After Show here on AfterBuzz TV. Tonight we are talking about Season 5, Episode 15, Rise and Shine. Guys, we're going to be taking a walk down memory lane to look at Hale's flashback sequences, finally find out what happened to Talbot, and guys, we're going to dig into some alien confederacy stuff. It's going to be a great time. Stay tuned.
You're tuning into the destination for TV superfan discussion, AfterBuzz TV. And now, let the buzz begin!
Okay, Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D.
Deep
is always great.
Deep breath.
Okay, I'm sorry, I've been away for a week, so it's a lot to come back to. A lot to go over. Anyway, deep breath in and out, and we're good. Hey there, Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. fans. How are you all doing tonight? Welcome back to the Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. After Show here on AfterBuzz TV. To my left is the fantastic Zach Wilson.
Hey, guys. I'm very excited to dig into this episode and dig into the past.
Yes. That's where...
The past, the future, outer space... Earth, space, I don't know.
We're not digging into the future past this time. We're digging into the past, which has repercussions for the future. That's a mouthful.
Yes, those things.
Those are all things that are true. I'm Megan Salinas. And guys, for those of you watching live, Zach has got you guys covered on the live chat. We are going to be keeping an eye on the Twitter hashtag ABTVMarvel. Sadly, Taron and Jesse could not join us. They are once again fighting to the death and didn't invite us.
It's always them.
I just want an invitation. Like, that's, is that too much to ask to be, like, invited in on the festivities?
Oh, man.
Maybe next time. Maybe next time they fight to the death. But this episode is, for me, I really loved this episode. I love whenever we get extended flashbacks that really humanize our antagonist this season. And that was a good chunk of what this episode was.
Yeah.
Zach, what were your initial thoughts?
You know, I was hesitant about the idea of bringing Hydra back again, because we talked about it a little bit last week.
It just won't die.
It's just like, to bring Hydra back at this point, after we've killed it so many times. Like, we killed it in the movies, and then it stayed alive via Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. and this weird religious context, and then we killed it there with fire.
Like, it literally burned.
Yeah, fire in a very real way. I was very hesitant about the idea of bringing it back, but I think of ways that they were going to, this was, I think, the cleanest. Like, it makes sense that there would be, like, a couple of outliers that didn't get caught up in it, that were deep in the system but managed to avoid detection. And it's not like Hale is really trying to bring Hydra back. She's not like, I'm gonna fly the Hydra flag and take over the world.
No.
She comes from Hydra and has specific plans.
Yeah.
So I'm fine with that. And I loved the Hydra backstory. I like, Hydra Academy is adorable.
Can I just say that the entire time this episode was going on, every time we got a school sequence, I just kind of sat here and went, I would totally watch a show about the Hydra School of Witchcraft and Wizardry.
Hydra babies. Your little baby Sitwell. Baby Von Strucker.
Okay, can we, like, give a shout out to the casting department for this episode? Because, like, the younger casting of all those characters was pitch perfect.
Sitwell, we didn't really get much out of the Von Strucker guy, but the Sitwell was Sitwell. It was like his his delivery, just like, he's such a minor character in the show and in the movies, but like, it hit perfectly.
Yeah, and it's just so, again, such a humanizing thing to just see this, you know, disaffected teenager kind of sag a little bit about, like, all he wanted to be, like, the prophecy was, not prophecy, but she was predicting that, oh, you're just going to end up in middle management, whatever. And that's sort of what ends up happening to him. And you just see that weight kind of sag on him, like, oh, I'm never going to rise through the ranks of Hydra. I'm not going to be great like my other classmates. I would totally watch. I don't know if I would watch an entire, like, seven season series of it, but I would definitely sit down and watch one season of Hydra Academy.
A little mini series. Yeah, I could see that.
Absolutely. I mean, they did one for Yo-Yo. I would totally love Hydra Academy mini series. The little clicks are just so freaking precious. And to see, like, again, the bored teenagers, like, sitting in the front row, like, oh, yeah, we get it. Hail Hydra. Shield is stupid. We got you.
I mean, it makes sense that there would be Hydra agents that have been indoctrinated from birth, because they can't all be recruited like Ward was to the fold. So yeah, it makes sense that there had to have been students that were raised and trained and then sent out into it's such a weird thing to think about, this evil organization like training these kids, like they would have day-to-day lives. So then they're like, ooh, we're graduating. Like, where are we gonna graduate to? Like, it's like it's military school. You get your assignments. Like, it makes me think of Ender's Game. Like, ooh, what army are you gonna get assigned to? Like, well, I'm assigned to SHIELD, where I'm going to now go live a false identity for the rest of my life. That's what false cool. identity will you have? That's what you learn at graduation.
That, and like, it's also cool because we look at Hale and, you know, she wanted to be an astronaut. Like, yeah, she was born into Hydra, so to speak, but ultimately it's a very relatable ambition that she wants. She wants to go into space. So many kids want to grow up to be astronauts. And so, like, seeing her be like, I want to be an astronaut when I grow up, it's very cute and very endearing. And again, knowing that they didn't necessarily have a choice in terms of becoming Hydra, you know, it was something that they were brought up and basically, I don't want to say brainwashed, but pretty much raised and educated.
Indoctrinated is the right word. Like, they weren't introduced to any other philosophy. And when you're raised around something, it's just like,
it's any just part other of your culture. Thing
that you, any other part of your culture that you grew up in, like, you are, for better or worse, indoctrinated into that belief system.
Yeah, and you also do very much get her outsider mindset, too, even though she was raised in Hydra. We got the hint from it a couple weeks ago when she mentioned it being a boys' club. We kind of get to see how that plays out firsthand.
Do we?
As she's harassed, you know, just in her normal day-to-day. But then even when she graduates and is one of the few female candidates to make it all the way past that graduation to shoot the dog, which was terrible, but a good callback. She finally gets rewarded, so to speak, and it ends up not at all being what she wanted, and she doesn't really get a choice in the matter, and it's terrible.
Yeah, I mean, that we see this young version of Hale, like, pushing and fighting, and, like, yeah, we know that she works for it's to get better in the most evil organization on the planet, but you want to root for her, at least, like, as the underdog in this story. And then for her assignment to basically be like, your most the most valuable qualification that you have is that you have a womb and a uterus. Yep. Because they're giving her what she wants, essentially, like saying you will be vital to Hydra and the future of Hydra
in this very specific project that you wanted to be a part of,
but not in any way that you ever wanted to be.
Yeah, and it was really, Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. doesn't make me cringe very often. Hearing Whitehall say, we want to artificially inseminate you, young lady, that made me cringe. That sent a shiver down my spine.
Yeah.
And when she, you know, tries to push back and say, I don't feel like that's the best use of my talents. I have more to offer than just, you know, being the biological mother to a science fair project, essentially. And he basically goes, well, you always have a choice whether or not you want to comply. Again, another really good callback to what he was constantly doing in season two. And then also just very much a clear threat. It's like, yeah, sure, you don't have to comply if you don't want to. You'll be dead as that dog, but
He basically is saying, like, we'll just make you comply.
Yeah.
Like, he's like, we can do that. I think that's the use of the word comply, is basically saying, like, we can put you into the chamber and brainwash you until you do comply.
Your choice.
Yeah. Or you could just make it easy. And she picks, she decides to make it easy.
Yeah. Because, like, and seeing her rise through the ranks over at the Air Force, too, and we get the, I really liked the structure of this episode, starting with her waking up, and then, you know, going to Ruby waking up, and then going to Talbot waking up, and then going to Coulson waking up. This was all structured very neatly, and I really appreciated that recurring sort of device to indicate a break in the act, I guess you could say. You know, that ties into the title, Rise and Shine. So yeah, when we get to Ruby, we see, you know, she's risen through the ranks of the Air Force and she's still very loyal to Hydra. But we also get like this sort of tender relationship between the two of them too, which was not something I anticipated when we first saw Ruby being, you know, housed in this Hydra facility, so to speak. So that was an interesting development.
Yeah, the idea of Ruby as this weapon, or like, here's the thing, like, is she a weapon or is she like a design, like, is she designed to be their leader? Because Whitehall seemed to be inferring that she was like being built to lead them, not just fight for them, but to lead them.
Everything that he was saying made it sound like she was going to be the Hydra equivalent of Captain America, that sort of super soldier, which on the one hand could very well have been someone in a leadership position at Hydra, somebody to lead them to victory. On the other hand, knowing Whitehall, it could also just have been another weapon or another tool at their disposal, something that would lead them to victory, but, you know, wouldn't actually be leading them. So, and I also wouldn't put it past him to lie, to basically tell her, yes, you are, we are trusting you with the future of Hydra. Your progeny will be the leader of Hydra. I wouldn't be surprised if that was just a lie he was telling her.
The leader, sort of like, or like a leader under the council.
Yeah.
Like I think you're right. Like, it was, she is sort of being built to be the equivalent of Captain America, who is never, like, Captain America is not the president.
No.
But he is still a leader of, like, the American forces in World War II.
Mm-hmm.
And he, like, depending on the time period in the comics and the movies, like, he may be the leader of the Avengers, but there's still, like, Tony and there's still Nick Fury when that was a thing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Before S.H.I.E.L.D., like, was dismantled.
Yeah.
And now they're just sort of fragments of it. It still exists.
So he still takes orders. So I guess that's the idea for Ruby, is
yeah,
that she is a faction who maybe joins the council, like, down the road, that kind of thing.
Yeah, and also, I think the main thing to take away from it is that she was biologically created to be an enhanced individual, and that there's another component of that later on down the line where Whitehall coded that, I guess, aspect of it as being the destroyer of worlds, which... Very interesting, knowing that the title that has been attributed to Daisy all this time, up until this point, we just thought that was sort of, oh, that's just what we call her because she destroyed the world, or supposedly destroyed the world. Knowing that that was a Whitehall project, it's like, oh, there's an extra layer here now, and it's also interesting kind of looking at Whitehall, who died very unceremoniously relatively early in this series, knowing that his actions and his projects still have lasting repercussions and could ultimately be the thing that destroys the world. It's like, oh, hey, Whitehall, I just thought, you know, you were a character that came and went and then died in kind of a funny joke way. But no, you had a lasting impact on this show.
I did like the moment where Hale goes, are you familiar with Daniel Whitehall? And he's like, yeah, I buried him. And there was this moment where she goes, are you, what?
wait, what?
She was expecting to, like, fill him in on who Whitehall is. He's like, oh, no, I murdered that dude.
Oh, yeah, that guy I shot. It was very funny. it's just like, I just need to take a moment to process that. That man redefined my life and completely shaped my future. And processed and go.
Yeah, well, it was also, I think, a moment for Hale, like, if she had any underestimated Coulson at all, this was a reminder to her that she should not, because Coulson is, if not her, like, she considers herself, like, the head of this part, this, like, organization that she's built, but Coulson's been the head of a much more deeply complex and larger, at times, organization than she is. Like, he took down the person that built her up, and even though he is their prisoner, he went of his own accord, and ultimately he's more powerful than she is.
Yeah, and it's also really funny, just... Again, talking about the level of experience that he has in sort of dealing with mind games and psychological manipulation, that when they start using the same tactics that worked on Alex, that worked on Talbot, like, Coulson just looks at it and was like, oh, I see what you're doing. Yeah,
C-. Oh, is this supposed to throw me off balance? Ah! Oops, all berries.
Okay, C+. Plus. I'll be in my room.
Product placement for General Mills.
I'll be in my room. And so it's fun seeing that juxtaposition, because we see it very much played up for drama in the case of Alex and in the case of Talbot, but then we get to Coulson and it's played for laughs. And that, again, it shows how competent he is as a leader and as an agent.
Yeah.
So makes me sad that he's dying.
Well, we'll see what happens there.
You're one in a million, Coulson. But yeah, it's talking about kind of the it's fun looking at this episode as kind of seeing the downfall of Hydra 2 and seeing it progressively deteriorate, because the first time we see this class in this school, you know, the classroom is completely full. It seems like it's very bustling and very full. By the time Ruby is being educated and getting ready to graduate, there are far fewer students in the classroom. And then by the time that flashback is done, most of Hydra is dead and gone, to the point where Hale and Ruby are basically the only ones left out of that particular division. We know that at that time, there's still, like, the religious side of Hydra and everything like that, but a lot of those other sort of splinters have already been eliminated at this point in the show. So, yeah, it's kind of interesting looking at it as Ruby and Hale effectively being the last of Hydra, and having Hale not really have any desire to bring Hydra back. She's like, nah, that was stupid and dumb in a boys' club.
Well, she wants to, she believes in, I think, the tenets of Hydra, the way that, like, the amount of control that they have over the general public is really her, like, her mantra, well, if you will.
And also, she's, as she points out to Coulson, she has a higher vantage point, at least from her perspective. That's the way she sort of justifies it to herself, in the way that I'm sure a lot of other Hydra agents have justified it to themselves. But bringing in that alien factor, that definitely does change things a little bit. Yeah. They've done terrible things. They did terrible things to Talbot. But adding in that alien factor, that does change the game a little bit of, like, hey, maybe we should put our differences aside.
Yeah, I mean, this Confederacy is coming for the planet. Like, so they're... So the Confederacy is what, a group of outer space, like, mobsters, effectively?
Yeah. Coulson referred to them as, like, warmongers or, like, war profiteers. Warlords, I think, is what he said.
Yeah, they're the mob, like, shaking you down for like, they literally call it protection. It's protection money. and they're basically, like...
This is a nice planet you got there. Be a shame if something were to happen to it.
Yeah, basically that's what happens. Like, that's what's going on. You have this dude pop out. Like, what did they call him? Like, his name is Kovas, according to IMDb. Interesting side note. That weird, like, I think he's a Kree, but it was too dark to really tell. So he might have not been, like, I I couldn't tell if he was blue or not in that light.
No, he had a human appearance, at least as far. Well,
the Kree have enough of a human. Like that's true. Like, the lighting, I couldn't tell if he was. And Kovaas is like, that's a Kree-ish name, I guess.
I mean, a lot of people have been talking about Skrull related.
He's definitely not a Skrull, unless he's transformed. But like, so that we can set aside.
We've been talking about the possibility of Skrulls on this show for like. Four seasons at this point.
I mean, at least like from his appearance, he's not visibly a Skrull. So yeah. We can rule that out. Who knows what other alien race he could be from? I have to assume that he's Kree.
He looks human. He might be Kree. But we know that even looking at like Enoch and Noah, like they had humanoid appearances, even though they were effectively time robots.
Yeah, I mean, look, they could, for all we know, it could be Xandarian. Yeah, like, they all like most of the in the as opposed to the comic books.
A lot of the aliens have more humanoid looking appearances.
Yeah, just for the sake of saving money. But this guy, just a, like fun facts, like Peter Mensa, if he looks familiar to you, because it was bugging
me. He's been all over the place.
Yeah, he's been in all kinds of things, from Spartacus. He was apparently an Avatar. he was on, I recognized him, I had to look this up, but like it was like, oh, he was on Sleepy Hollow Season 3, The Hidden One, if you remember that insanity. that was this guy. And then this is the fun MCU factoid. He actually was in The Incredible Hulk.
The Edward Norton one.
So the one that is canon to the MCU. he played General Joe Greller, who was like a small side character, who like put together the strike team that Blonsky, or the Abomination, like he was the one that brought Blonsky in. So like, I mean, there have been other people who have like had these like tiny parts and then come back. Like there was what's his name from Agent Carter, who was actually like one of the cops in New York during the Avengers. Like that stuff happens. I mean, the woman that played Mariah on Luke Cage was also in Civil War. Those were like less than 2 years from each other, and she had significant, like, at least meaningful roles in each one.
When I think of actors who played smaller roles and then came back for bigger parts, I always think of Doctor Who, Martha, because initially she was playing like basically an extra who got killed by a Cyberman,
and Karen Gillan who played like a random like Vestal Virgin at Pompeii, and then like half a season later is Amy Pond.
She's the companion. Yeah.
But so that's just a fun fact. But you can choose to read it as this alien infiltrated the U.S. military back in 2008, and
before the Avengers were even formed.
Yeah, and he's been slowly working to the system since then. He tried to help defeat us with the Abomination, and then he went back to his ship to come back. He's been slowly
whittling away at Hydra and is now manipulating everything that's left of it to his own devices. So again, that he can be that space mobster that extorts everyone for all their spice money.
but we got a flash of what this is the big thing. I'm pretty sure that was that Thanos' ship.
It looked like it.
Like, that seemed the implication, and it's massive, and it was pretty good CGI. So I'm assuming they basically just called Infinity War, like, hey, can we borrow, like, one shot just for this one thing? So I think whether or not this Confederacy can actually do anything, I think they're warning about Thanos coming.
It was shown at a very different angle than the brief glimpse of it we got in Thor Ragnarok. So it's hard to tell whether or not it's the same ship. However, knowing that Infinity War comes out this month, it seems like it would be a weird choice for something.
Oh my God, that is this month.
Yeah, it seems like it would be a weird choice for it to be anything other than Thanos' ship, or the ship of one of his generals at the very least.
All right, so I'm looking at Thanos' ship. That's not Thanos' ship.
Okay.
If anything, it actually might look more like the Asgardian ship. But, like, you never know. Like, it,
I mean,
the
it
implication
be.
That it's somehow Thanos is too strong.
It would be funny, though, if the Asgardian ship landed just before the world is about to break apart. He's like, hello, everyone. My name is Doug here. I'm here with a bunch of space refugees. And oh, no, the planet's about to explode.
Yeah, I guess. Like, I'm looking at different, like, previs shots and, like, the one shot from, picture of the one shot from Ragnarok, and like the one the main shot from Thor, it looks much smoother.
Yeah,
that was very specifically, it looked like jutting out edges, like, but it, look, the point is, it could be anything. It's probably somehow Thanos or
yeah.
or the Black Order
again,
or
I'm thinking
his
it's
cabal,
one of, yeah.
whatever.
I'm thinking it's one of his underlings that happens to be heading towards Earth at this exact moment, maybe the first of Thanos' forces that'll be coming down the way. I don't know. It's hard to say. But really, really quickly, before we dig more into this episode, I have an announcement for you guys really quick. As a fan of Maria Menounos' books, I know how much you can learn from her. It's nice to have a free weekly podcast to learn even more. The Conversations with Maria Menounos podcast covers so many topics and gives so many life lessons and tips to help you become your best you. Love listening. I love Maria's celebrity interviews, too. I always learn new things. As a host pursuing my dreams, it's great to have Maria's podcast for all career lessons as well. So, guys, if you haven't already done so, go to iTunes and listen to Maria Menounos' podcast.
Conversations with Maria Menounos. By supporting Maria in everything she does, you support AfterBuzz directly, because Maria is our founding mother, along with Kevin Undergaro, and like they are why we have AfterBuzz. So support them, read her books, listen to her podcast. She's a wonderful human being, and you can definitely learn from her.
Yep, it's good thumbs for up. Anybody who wants to learn and grow in all areas of your life. So go and check that out. And when you do, let her know it was the Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. podcast.
Yeah, specifically the Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. podcast. Those other podcasts are great. They're wonderful, but this is the best one.
True
the best
story.
One.
True story. We were on top for a while. It was great. We had this rivalry with, what was it, How to Get Away with Murder? How long ago was that?
No, I think it was Scandal.
Scandal. That
and then we
I knew it was a
them.
Chandra Rhyne show.
By the way, guys, since we're smoothly transitioning into that, like if you are on iTunes, or if you're on YouTube, but if you're on iTunes, be sure to go there and hit us with a review. Or, like, a rating. That stuff helps people find it. Like, we have so many amazing, like, people have rated. For those of you who are maybe listening on YouTube or watching on YouTube, if you haven't been using the iTunes podcast in a while, we are back to just look for the Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. after show on iTunes. You can find us there again. I know it was different for a little while,
yeah.
But it's back to the old way. It's easy to find. And since it's back to like easy to find and just the one feed of podcasts, we're going to start giving shout-outs again.
Yay!
To the people who leave us those reviews. And so I want to give a shout-out to our old friend, Prodigal 358, who's back. I wish it was Phil Coulson's left hand, but Prodigal 358, it missed you too, who said, yeah. Episode 100 of all of my emotions. Oh my God, guys, the 100th episode of S.H.I.E.L.D. had me having every feel on the emotional range. I am just in awe. Can't wait to hear what you all have to say, which we said like 2 weeks ago. Thank you for listening, Prodigal 358. We will hopefully hear from you all soon. But yeah, be sure to log on there. And if you're watching on YouTube, hit us with a thumbs up or leave a comment below to let us know what you think of the episode of the show. And it helps other people find the show as well.
Yeah. And again, just thank you to everybody who's stuck with us when, you know, sort of our podcast was a little bit more difficult to find. Thank you guys for sticking with us. It really means a lot that you continued to not only listen to us, but that you went out of your way to search for it and find us again. So thank you guys so, so much. You guys are the best.
Yeah.
So yeah, let's get back to this episode.
Yeah,
I do want to talk about Talbot a little bit, because his bit was something the show does its drama really well, but the way they showed the repercussions of Talbot's injury was a little bit more uncomfortable than this show normally likes to go, because it felt like, uncomfortably real in the way that a lot of people suffering from head injuries, you know, it felt like an actual legitimate repercussion of somebody suffering from that sort of head injury. It's fantastic that he lived through it, but seeing the effect it had on him as a person, his development as he's trying to recover, and the relationship it has with him and his family sort of deteriorate, and how Hale takes advantage of that, that was something really hard to watch.
Yeah.
And oh, go ahead.
Oh, just like Adrian Pasdar's performance in that scene with his son, I thought was phenomenal. Like, yeah. It was quick, it was simple, but like in and out, like it was a good performance.
Yeah,
like the little bit that he had to do.
And even though later on in the episode, the interaction with Ruby with Coulson is, you know, very much played up for laughs, when we get to Talbot and knowing that he has difficulty with impulse control because of his injury, like, that part was really, it was really sad to see this character that we've known and kind of grown attached to over the past few seasons deteriorate in this way and then get punished for it. And, you know, even though Hale claims that she's working for the greater good to save the planet, at the end of the day, she kidnapped this man, took him away from his family, basically destroyed the relationship he had with them, and then essentially kept him and probably tortured him for all of the information that he had on S.H.I.E.L.D. You know, and he couldn't really, and all the while he kept hoping that S.H.I.E.L.D. was going to bust through that door any day now, yeah. And they were incapable of doing it because they were in the future.
Well, I love, the other thing I loved about Talbot in this was like, we've seen him grow in his like belief in S.H.I.E.L.D. and everything that Coulson and his team are doing. Because as Mr. Goku Jr. In the chat points out, Talbot, he automatically knew that it wasn't Daisy.
Yeah!
Like, the fact that he visually saw a person that he knows shoot him in the head.
And he's like, wasn't her. Like,
I know it wasn't Daisy. Like, he knows Daisy so, like, well enough at this point that he trusts that there's no way that she just went and point blank shot him in the head.
That was an evil robot. And, yeah. Like, old Talbot would have just completely written off S.H.I.E.L.D. and went like, okay, yeah, you're all terrorists and menace. But, like, knowing her and going, no, she'd never do that. Absolutely not. That was an evil robot duplicate. Like, it says a lot about how their relationship has grown and developed. And even as he gets taken away in that moment too, he's like, S.H.I.E.L.D. never came. S.H.I.E.L.D. never came. I kept holding out hope that S.H.I.E.L.D. would come. And as he's taken away, all he can do is yell how sorry he is that he wasn't able to hold out just a little longer. And that's really heartbreaking to watch.
Yeah.
But again, fantastic performances. Yeah. And I hope we get more from Talbot this season.
Yeah, I like that character, and I like Adrian Pasdar, so
I do too.
Glad to see him. Can we talk about the other great performance Ingrid Dick-Stecker?
Before we switch gears, I do just want to put a button on that whole sort of plot line by saying that, you know, the only thing that, like, brings this potential alliance to a screeching halt is Coulson going, we were in the future! And that, you can just sort of see it on Hale's face where she's just like, okay, sure you were!
It's like, come on, the amount of stuff you've seen in this world, you don't think like, oh, maybe time travel too?
She's like, I've made a terrible mistake putting all my faith in this man. Okay, we're just gonna set you to the side, yeah, real quick, yeah. You crazy man.
Yeah. Oh, before we get off Hale, there was, I thought it was really cool that they, this is going back a little ways, but that in the past they dropped like the idea of creating Creel,
yeah,
as well, like that was
the Absorbing Man.
Yeah, like they were all, Hydra was working on the tech to create the Absorbing Man as far back as like whatever year that was. I don't know what
26
that,
years ago is the way the show listed it. Yeah. Okay,
sure. That adds up. But yeah, like the fact that like that's where that came, like it came, like Creel came from, like a Whitehall experiment. It's all baked in there, and I really enjoyed that.
Yeah, and even knowing that, like, Von Strucker, who later would experiment on Scarlet Witch and Quicksilver and everything like that, that he was just like, yes, give me that Tesseract. I have plans for the Tesseract. Like, those are all great little details.
Yeah.
So, yeah, let's go ahead and switch gears and talk about amazing performances, because I feel like last week's episode was one of the best episodes that Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. has done, and I feel like Ian DeCastecker's performance very much ties into that, and you're absolutely right. He continues to give a fantastic performance as this conflicted individual who has to reconcile having done terrible things in his mind for the right reasons. He's like, I didn't want to do it, but I'm not sorry about it. And that's, as Gemma points out, an interesting moral gray area.
Yeah. Well, it's the greater good, like, problem. Like,
which is exactly what Hydra would say.
but Fitz is facing, like, a very, like, it's not a philosophical question at this point. It is a very real... What it like?
Well, and it worked.
Yeah, I mean, yeah. That's the thing. It's like he knows. Like there's a very measurable difference. Like this crack in space time will destroy us. I have to do something violent and harmful to a friend of mine, but it will save us all. And she doesn't want to do it, but if I force her, we will all be saved.
Yeah.
That's a terrible dilemma to be placed in, but he saw the dilemma. He did the math of, like, okay, she's going to hate me, but I'm going to save everybody.
But
Fitz having a very mathematical brain to begin with.
But then you also tie in the added calculation of Daisy not wanting to do this because she, in her mind, thinks she will ultimately end up destroying the world with her powers, and him factoring that into his calculations of being like, well, we can either watch the world be destroyed right now or it can be destroyed later. You know that was like a factor in his in him reconciling this too. It's like, we have an immediate threat right now to the entire planet.
Yeah. So, like, I find it hard to hate Fitz over it.
Yeah.
I know, like, there's a debate in the chat about, like, is this Fitz or is this Fritz? And, like, there's no distinction anymore. This is one person that, like, Fitz hadn't put a mental block on Fritz before this, but now, like, he's torn that wall down and he's pushing forward. Like, who is a personality? And Max sort of like tried to like reconcile this, but like, and May talked about it, but Fitz had the most extreme difference between his real world personality and his framework personality. We are all just a sum of our experiences. Like that's who we are at our, at least that's my opinion of the world. Like we are a sum of our experiences. Like there's some parts of us that are built by nature, but at the end of the day, like like the nurture of the world will mold who that is.
Your memories inform you in the present of who you are.
Yeah, and Fitz has memories. He has decision making. He has experiences that led him to believe this specific to become that person, and he has to reconcile the two.
Yeah.
And so his philosophy is directly affected now, and he is much more willing to just to bite the like do the hard thing.
And from an acting standpoint, Ian DeCastecker has so much to work through, because there's the guilt aspect of what Fitz is going through for what he had to do to his friend. There's the analytical side that in his mind knows it was the right thing to do. And then there's also the self-pity and the feeling like he doesn't deserve to be forgiven for what he's done, that feels like he doesn't deserve Gemma. And that it's so cool to see him go like back and forth between being this very conflicted version of Fitz and having the shades of Fritz in there too, when he's talking about how he's not wrong for having done it, that it was still the right thing to do, but it doesn't feel like a Jekyll and Hyde personality thing, too. Yeah. They feel like one and the same, which is very difficult, I think, to pull off. And then to bring it all back around in this final interaction with Gemma,
yeah,
to this very endearing moment where he finally learns that Deke is his grandson, and he's like, no, he's the worst. So to have all of that tragedy and all of that moral ambiguity, and then to top it all off with a moment of very endearing levity like that, this is a heck of an episode for Ian Dickensdecker. Yeah. I don't know. I know that Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. isn't really a show to be nominated for an Emmy for, like, its acting or whatever, but I feel like everybody in the cast has given performances worthy of one. Definitely Ian Dickensdecker in this regard. So, yeah, that was great. And plus, it was just funny to see him, like, having to work through, our daughter is going to grow up and marry a space bum, and they're going to give birth to a Deke. No.
To a Deke. I love the way he says that. He's just like, but he's the worst. that's such a grandpa. He fits as such a grandpa already. Like, everything about the way he dresses. Like, I say that I'm wearing a grandpa sweater.
I was going to say all the sweaters, and then I saw you wearing a sweater, and I was like, oh, never mind.
I fully embrace how much wearing the amount of cardigans that I do makes me a grandpa. I probably got it from watching Grimm, and I was just like, Monroe looks cool. Like, I'm just going to dress like that.
They look very stylish.
Look, it's very easy to stay both warm and cool in Los Angeles.
It's just a light sweater. It's perfect for all occasions. But yeah, so that was very good. That was good to see. Especially knowing, although it's interesting too, knowing that the knowledge of Deke being Gemma and his grandson has very much altered Gemma's perspective on their future. She's basically like, I'm immortal! Woo! Which I feel like is a very dangerous mentality to have, especially because we know that there are future flashbacks of the future past with her not in them. So I feel like that hubris is going to get her into trouble.
Yeah. I mean, that, like, both Yo-Yo and Gemma by the end of this are pretty, like, they're, like, about to get real dangerously reckless. Like, but, like, they think they're gonna save the world, right? So, yeah. Are they just giving, like, if they're...
No comeuppance!
If they're going to push forward as if they're invincible, then they're also accepting that they're going to destroy, that the world is going to be destroyed at the same time, which mm-hmm. is an interesting situation for them both to be in.
Yo-Yo looks at it in a different light of, like, either I'm invincible until I die on that spaceship, or if I do happen to die prior to that, then we've broken the loop and have found a way to save the world. So in her mind, it's sort of a win-win.
Yeah.
Or not necessarily a win-win, but
getting reckless, like dangerously reckless.
Yeah. So that'll be interesting, especially because Daisy doesn't seem like she's in any sort of position to lead right now, at least not mentally. She doesn't want to lead. She just wants to find Coulson. Using
it. I think she'll be good once she accepts it. She just doesn't want it because to accept the role of leader means that Coulson is going
to
die and not coming back.
Coulson's dying.
So it's not about like that she's refusing to lead. It's that she refuses to accept that Coulson is dead.
She's just in the denial stage of the five stages of death.
She's disconnected.
Oh no!
That's why I've been working on the computer. I'm trying to fix it.
We are running short on time. We did have some quick news and gossip before we wrap it up.
I didn't even realize what time it was.
Yeah, we have to wrap it up. So real quick news and gossip.
If you guys didn't hear the news, they made an announcement about Captain Marvel, the movie, which is coming out next year and is going to be set in the 90s. And there were two casting announcements this week. One, which is less important to us, is Ronan the Accuser, because this is in the past. So Ronan the Accuser from Guardians.
Which makes sense because of the Kree aspect of things. Yeah.
Yeah. He's going to appear in it. And above that, Agent Coulson, Phil Coulson, yes, is going to be there alongside an eye patchless Nick Fury. I'm so, like, so, because of course he would be there. Chat's gone for me. But of course Coulson would be there. It's the night. He's like Nick Fury's go-to guy for any of these crazy power things. So when they start theoretically working with Captain Marvel, with Carol Danvers in some way, Coulson's going to be there. The only way this could get better is if they also manage to get Peggy Carter somehow, like older Peggy Carter somehow involved. That's what I want to see. Marvel, please. Please.
Just casting Haley Atwell, guys.
Seeing Coulson and Peggy Carter in the same place would melt me.
Oh.
It would. I wish I could see the chat's reaction to this. I'll have to look it up later. It would melt me.
In a Captain Marvel movie, too.
Yeah, we should wrap it up.
Again, if you go back to our predictions way back in season one, do you remember the days where you were predicting Phil was Captain Marvel?
Marvel, to be clear. And yes, I shouted about that many, many times, including my very first appearance on this podcast.
Oh, good times. Anyway, I think that just about does it. I know we probably don't have time for predictions.
Yeah, we'll wrap it up. You guys tell us your predictions in the chat.
Please do.
And in the comments or tweet them at us.
Yeah.
We'll see Ruby Destroyer of Worlds next week.
Yes. And again, thank you to everybody who's been tweeting at us like all week about your predictions and about just everything in terms of this show that you're loving, yes, or that's driving you crazy or anything else like that. You guys are the best. And we wouldn't be here if it weren't for you guys. So thank you guys so much. Zach, where can people go if they want to find you?
You guys can find me on Twitter and Instagram at ThatZachWilson. If you're in the Los Angeles area this Wednesday at 10:30 p.m. My sketch team Turncoat will be doing a show at the PAC Theater on Santa Monica Boulevard. It's a very special show. Turncoat Sinks the Titanic, a night of nothing but Titanic sketch comedy. That's 10:30 p.m. at the PAC Theater with our team member, the other team, Dr. America. Check it out. It's posted on Facebook events, and I'll post it on Twitter.
Thursday the 4th, right?
Yes.
Awesome. That's going to be so much fun. If you guys haven't already done so, you guys can follow Tehran at I Am Tehran all over the social media atmosphere. And you can follow Jesse at JessKlein1 on Twitter and Instagram. And I'm Megan Salinas. You guys can follow me on Twitter and Instagram at TheMenguin. That's TheMenguin. Thank you guys so much for joining us this week. We will see you all next time.
From executive producers Maria Menounos, Kevin Undergaro, Phil Svitek, and the entire AfterBuzz TV staff, we would like to thank you for listening to the AfterBuzz TV network. To watch or listen to other after shows and post comments or questions, be sure to visit AfterBuzzTV.com. I'm Sir Richard Wentworth, and this has been a presentation of AfterBuzz TV.
Buzz you later.
The views expressed herein are those of the hosts only and do not necessarily reflect the views of AfterBuzz TV or its owners or principals.